Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 comics that sold through Diamond to retailers for January 2015. Now, Sam, we've talked about these numbers on and off, and January is always usually kind of a down month. You know, we've got people coming out of the holidays actually having gotten their bills and having to pay that and thinking, you know, maybe I ought to pull back on comics or something like that. We had really unusual sales this time around, and a lot of that can go towards the top item, which unsurprisingly was Star Wars number one. And that put Marvel well in the lead. They had 51.06 of the total units for the top 300, compared to 28.51% for DC. And that's a difference of Marvel having close to 3.5 million and DC having well over 1.9 million. So big difference. But the reality is, even without Star Wars number one, if you just ignored that and figured, well, how would DC and Marvel have done compared to each other? Marvel still would have had 42.77% of the unit sales of the then top 299, compared to DC's 33.34%. So DC would have had a third of the total units for the top 300 minus Star Wars, Marvel 42.77. So Marvel certainly got a huge advantage from Star Wars number one, but it's not like that was the deciding factor. I think the bottom line is right now Marvel has stronger selling titles than DC. And, I mean, this is the strongest lead Marvel's had over DC since I think it was June 2009. But there was a period where we would see these kinds of percentages. Marvel over the 50% mark, and DC obviously well below, because the other publishers had to take some of it. But this is the first time we've seen it in a while, and again, Star Wars certainly contributed to that, but did not cause that. But man, Marvel had nearly $15 million in retail sales this month. I think they were only about under $240 away from that.
This is where I think going back a year does help. DC is down, but virtually flat to a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
A year ago, they sold 1.767 million. This year, 1.760 million. They're down, no doubt about it. They're down about 700,000, about 7,000 units. However, that made up 33% then. It makes up 28% now. If kind of you look at the last few years, the trend follows, DC will probably sell a little less, but still about 1.7 next, and maybe down as low as 1.3 in March and April. I think the difference between the 41% and 51% from a year ago, a lot of that is Star Wars.
Well, I think a lot of that is also size of the pie.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, DC essentially duplicated exactly what it did last January and not that far off what it did the January before that, which was actually, it's higher than that. In 2013, in January, DC sold 1.739 million. So their sales are actually fairly consistent. The percentages got thrown way out of whack by Star Wars. And possibly that there's some other titles from other publishers that are simply selling more that didn't exist back then.
Yeah, yeah.
But DC's 1.7 million units is about what they do in January.
What really, I think, puts the Star Wars sales into perspective is there are months that DC didn't do that much in the top 300. I mean, the retail value of Star Wars number one is more than DC had in the top 300 back in, I think it was January and May of 2011. So
I didn't look that. What is retail value? I guess I can figure it out real quickly.
Yeah, I had to do the math. I don't have that built into the spreadsheet.
Got it. Okay.
Don't need it that often. But, I mean, it was one of those cases where at a $4.99 cover price, that's a staggering amount for one title to do. And for it to be better than a really bad month for DC, says something. So I'm not trying to minimize Star Wars number one at all. That's I think, virtually impossible to do. But I do want to stress that it wasn't the deciding factor of Marvel coming out clearly on top this time around.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with that. You take out essentially 1 million units from Marvel, you're at 2.4 million units,
mm-hmm.
which is still up actually about 300,000 from a year ago in January, and up almost 500,000 from 2 years ago January. So Marvel is definitely growing, whereas again, DC is pretty much flat year over year. And then you add the other publishers in to those percentages, you kind of, you know, like I said, for something like this, I think it is interesting to look kind of year over year how the publishers do in January.
Yeah.
And DC's essentially flat. They sell 1.7 million units in January. They always do. Marvel's sold 2.2 million, not quite 2.2 million. And then this month, of course, you've got the 3.1 million. But again, you take the Star Wars out, you're still at 2.1. Marvel's slightly growing.
I'm looking at slightly different numbers, I guess, because when I see January units for DC, I'm seeing them averaging over 2 million, with the lowest they've ever done being back in 2004 and 5.
I'm looking at the 300 breakdown history.
Yeah, and I'm what, column K?
Column E.
That is the index values.
Oh, never mind. I'm looking at the wrong column.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that makes
sense. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so I was just looking at the wrong column.
Yeah, go over to columns K, J, and L.
Got it.
Because DC has some definite ups and downs in January, but almost across the board, they're usually well behind Marvel.
Yeah, you're right. 2.5, 2.19. Okay. Yeah, 2.5, 2.3, 1.9. Yeah, that's a 3-year downward trend, definitely.
Yeah.
Sorry, well, I had the wrong numbers.
There are a lot of numbers on these spreadsheets. That's what makes these episodes, frankly, kind of challenging to do. Is we have an organic conversation. We go where we go, and keeping up with, oh, wait, which numbers do I need to look at? Man, it's harder than I think some people give credit for.
Yeah.
I know I make mistakes, and I wrote the damn spreadsheets. DC, though, over those last 3 years where it's that downward trend, that's the new 52 by and large. You know, they have one more year above beyond that and stuff. I mean, huge difference between January 2011 and 2012, million units up, and that was pre-New 52, post-new the launch of the New 52. But Marvel, by and large, just has better selling titles. Now, I want to clarify that, because I think that's a little bit different than Marvel is growing. One of the things that is easy to lose sight of and to not fully appreciate when looking at these numbers, which are the aggregate of the top 300 items, is titles start somewhere in that list and drop down through that list over time until they get bounced out of that list, either falling below the radar, or more likely with Marvel and DC just getting canceled or ending, and they get replaced by a better-selling title. And what we've seen, particularly over the last year or so from Marvel, is a bunch of new number ones basically every week. You know, they're averaging a new title every week. Some of those are high-profile ones, some of them not so much. But every one of them is, in theory, replacing a far lower-selling title. So it's not necessarily that Marvel is selling better so much as they're managing their line better. They're not letting things get as low as DC tends to before killing them and replacing them. Now, that means we're winding up with a new volume of most titles on an almost yearly basis. And I want to do some analysis to what the average lifespan is for a title during the new 52 era at DC and the Marvel Now era over at Marvel, because these things just aren't lasting that long. Now, if they're not selling, they shouldn't last that long, but every one of these things is a jumping off point. And one of the things I tried to make a point of in my article this time around on comic book resources, and honestly, I don't know if I did a great job with that or not, but I'm starting to see a world of difference between a jumping on point and what I'm referring to as a jumping in point. Because I think a lot of these titles, they'll do like 0.1 issues over at Marvel or something, you know, some other, hey, now's the start of a new story arc, you can jump on. That's great, but I think a lot of people do that and kind of bounce right out. Whereas I think there is a jumping in kind of an issue, which is a much rarer breed, that gets you immersed enough in the story, you've got the context enough to make a judgment of, yeah, this is a story I really like, and gets you into that next issue. And I'm seeing a lot more jumping. Certainly, there are tons of jumping off points. They try to have occasional jumping on points, but I'm seeing very few true jumping in points, which are just jumping on points that, frankly, are much better written and have a better chance of, again, keeping the reader to the next issue. But I think with all of the new number ones at Marvel, all of the retoolings of titles over at DC and relaunching, because they've got another, two dozen titles starting up after Convergence at DC, changing how they write, changing how they think of these issues to get new readers and keep new readers. If somebody can crack that, that's gonna be a game changer. And yeah. I'm by no means suggesting I have an answer for how to do that, but I'm noticing a world of difference between first issues I sample and first issues I say, gosh, I've got to get this on my pull list.
Yeah, well, and I think we talked about this last 2 months, actually. By definition, almost, assuming an average reader reads an average number of titles month over month.
Mm-hmm.
Every jumping on point, whether it's a good one or not, by definition is a jumping off point for something else. It has to be.
Again, I quibble whether it has to be. I think you're right that it most likely is. And a lot of those things that cause people to sample a new issue is because they've either are getting off another one or another one has ended out from under them. But yes, normally it's not they're looking to increase what's on their pull list, but to maintain the number of titles on their pull list. And then yes, it's a question of cause and effect as to, is one bumping another thing off, or is the other thing going, freeing up a slot for that new item?
Yeah. And I think it's some combination of those two.
Oh, totally, totally. And to a degree, it almost doesn't matter cause and effect. The bottom line is to maintain sales, a publisher needs to spend marketing dollars or do something to make people aware of other books that are more likely to please them. They have to constantly put money into the system to maintain sales because of the churn on titles, both from readers saying, hey, I'm bored, I'm getting off, and publishers saying, it's not working, we're ending it. You know, every one of those, not everyone, but the majority of the new number ones we're getting over at Marvel are a direct result of a previous title ending. You know, I'd have to do a little bit more. I mean, yes, the count of number of comics is increasing. Frankly, over at Marvel, the number of titles tends to decrease over time a little, just based on them doing multiple issues a month of some things.
Yeah. Yeah, now it's interesting. I do find it very interesting when you look at, let's call it the top 20.
Okay.
Just to give you a wider spread. The Marvel books, you've got Spider-Man at 12 and issue 12 and 13. Okay. You then have Thor at issue 4. You've got a couple of twos and threes in Spider-Verse and Captain America and a bunch of number ones. The DC titles that are in there, 38, 38, 38, 38. So they're not the new books. They're the old books.
Harley Quinn with 14.
14. And I missed Guardians of the Galaxy at 23. But you still have Uncanny Avengers number 1, Wolverine number 1, Ant-Man number 1, Spider-Verse number 2, Captain America. Now, everything's under 5, with the exception of Spider-Man and the Guardians title.
All-new X-Men.
All-new X-Men's at 35. Okay, yep. The DC titles, you're talking Batman at 38, Justice League at 38, Harley Quinn at 14, Detective at 38, Batman Anne at 38. And then at the very bottom of the 20, you get the Batman Eternals 40. And then if you extend it down to 25, you get 41, 42, 43.
But also keep in mind, right above Batman Eternal is Avengers 40 and Uncanny X-Men 30.
Yeah. Yeah, that's okay. You're right.
But we wind up with a couple of most titles being within, frankly, I'm going to say the first six is the honeymoon period, give or take. Usually it's more the first three or four, but still the first arc mm-hmm. of a story. Then you've got a few that have managed to last a year or so. And should the lifespan of a title be counted in issues or in elapsed time? And I kind of think it needs both, and the two to be averaged or worked out together. Because it's one thing to say, okay, I'm 4 issues in, but I'm only a month in on a weekly book versus it's a quarterly book I'm a year in.
Well, and that's an interesting point. Monthly seems to be the default standard in comics.
Yes.
Which is interesting. Marvel seems to be pushing that envelope because there's a lot, you know, Spider-Man, we've got two in here.
Marvel yes. has been routinely shipping multiple times a month on half a dozen and a half titles for a few years now, actually.
Yep.
And it makes it to where you can get 18 issues of a given title for a surprising number of titles most yep. years.
Yep. Whereas DC's maintained pretty much a one a month other than the weeklies.
Yep.
Most of the indies tend to actually be the exact opposite of Marvel. They tend to be slightly less than one a month. Due to delays or other things, your average indie title, you rarely get 12 a year. Walking Dead's been on both sides of that coin.
It's not an average indie title, though.
Fair enough. It's the only one in this range, though.
True. But I think it's, again, with it being at 136 issues and having been just wildly successful, plus the TV show. And so Kirkman's doing all right.
Yeah.
So he can afford to, if he needs to, and I'm hoping he doesn't need to, but whatever he's doing, he's able to get somebody either to help him manage his time or he's just figured out how to, which is how come he's getting so many damn many issues of that out. And that's great because, man, it's helping the story momentum for me and I think overall. But I think most indie books fall into, in this case, one of two categories as far as this discussion goes. It's a smaller indie book that people are kind of doing on their side. They've got their day job. They've got something like that. So, man, getting 12 out a year, yeah, not going to happen. Or they're in the industry full time, but their indie book isn't enough to pay the bills. So they've got to go do a little here and there for Marvel, DC, or some other publisher, which again delays their own book.
Yeah.
We even see that sometimes with Bendis and Kirkman, where one of their titles, it's just, you know, I had bills to pay or work to do or reputation to maintain, whatever the reason is. And I'm not saying it's a bad reason that they pick or how they make the decision, but that's how you get Brilliant being 2 years late. That's how you get Super Dinosaur having an extended delay. And it just comes down to these guys kind of overextend a little bit at times.
Well, and then you have even some of the successful indie books. Like you said, Walking Dead's slightly different, but if you go back several years, when it was successful for an indie book, but not where it's currently at.
Okay.
It had some extended delays at different times. It was far from extremely consistent. From about 40 on, he spent every year, you know, making guarantees that there were going to be 12 issues the next year, and because of some of the issues that had happened in the 30s and 40s of that book.
Well, what's interesting is even during the 30s and 40s, when he would get behind, he'd work his butt off and get caught up.
Yes, that is true.
So fits and spurts, it was certainly uneven.
But then you get into things like Saga and Chew, and whether or not it's a single title, whatever Matt Fraction is doing kind of in his criminal line, where they almost have, we're going to call it a monthly, but we're telling you right now, we're going to do 3 months, take a month off, that.
They have scheduled hiatuses to maintain yep. the schedule.
Yep.
And I think that's brilliant because it sets expectations.
Yep.
If you tell me you're going to do an arc and then you're going to take a few months off to recharge, would I like the book during the few months? Yeah. Do I want you to recharge? Absolutely.
Yep.
Because frankly, it's if you've planned it, you've written the stories such that you're not ending me at a point where I'm just chomping at the bit for the next and it loses momentum. You've built the story along that.
What I find interesting is what we don't seem to have anymore are, particularly from the big two, are scheduled longer. Just, you know, how many, over a decade, Daredevil came out every other month?
Are you certain about that? That doesn't, which
go back,
decade?
Go back to the late 70s, early 80s.
When okay, Frank, late before, 70s, early 80s, before I was on the book. Okay, fair
but
enough.
But before, when Frank Miller was the artist and not the writer,
well,
the
X-Men
book
at one
was
point
a bi-monthly book.
Yeah.
We again, don't see that. We don't see that anymore.
I would disagree. We don't see it often.
We don't see it intentionally. We certainly don't see quarterly books anymore, other than anthologies and really, you know.
What category are you putting Sandman Overture or whatever it is?
Okay.
Into?
Was that supposed to be a quarterly book when it started?
I've
just gotten
know.
That far behind. Wasn't it monthly, and then it was bi-monthly, and then it's, okay, the second one's really late, and we're going to tell you all right now, the third one's going to be even later.
I thought it was going to be bi-monthly.
Okay.
And I think some of the before Watchmen books were scheduled to be 6 weeks.
Okay.
But you're right. Yes, highly unusual.
It's highly unusual. Action went bi-monthly, or... This is going to get confusing. Is bi-monthly once, twice a month or once every other month? Action Comics, though, went essentially twice a month for a while there. Again, that same era we're talking about.
Okay.
We don't see anything that really lists it that way anymore, even though, as you pointed out, Marvel somehow gets out 18 issues in a year, still kind of calling them monthlies, but they tend to come out more like every 3 weeks.
They tend to refer to them just as ongoings.
Yeah. And we got, and in the boom period in the late 80s, early 90s, we had the fifth week quarterlies.
Yes.
It seemed to have completely gone away.
Well, what happened then is they literally had first week, second week, third week, fourth week books.
Yep.
And any 5 week month, they did it kind of a fifth week skip event sometimes.
Yeah. You either got the skip event and then, you know, when you go to the Shield era Superman, there was, I don't remember what it was called, but there was essentially a quarterly book that was the
next. Superman, Man of Tomorrow.
Man of Tomorrow, yeah, which was the quarterly book.
Yeah.
To fill in that fifth week. As I remember, Batman did the same thing there in that same time period.
Well, I mean, the thing I would have done with the new 52 is I would have gone first week, second week, third week, fourth week book,
mm-hmm.
and then first, you know, fifth week. All the first week books get their annual. Second one, all the second week books do that. That kind of. That works great in theory. In practicality, not so much, particularly when you've got a book that lasts, you know, 8 months, and then, well, you've got another book starting out. Do you give it its annual and its second month? How do you play that out? You know,
yeah.
It's conceptually, it's nice. But again,
and as I remember, the first fifth week in the new 52 was virtually a dead week for DC. I think they put out two miniseries, but as we've talked about, that first wave of miniseries didn't sell all that well.
Well, and really, they haven't done that many miniseries since.
Since then, because they didn't work that time, yeah.
Yeah.
But I remember, as somebody who's pretty much all in on DC and a few other books here and there, I remember that first fifth week in the New 52, walking into my comic shop, used to getting 15 to 20 books and walking out with like two, because that was kind of all that came out that week.
They had a couple of weeks like that over the course of that first year or so.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that, and a couple of times it's like, okay, you get two books and five annuals or something now.
Yeah.
And it really kind of juggles the cash flow a little bit that way. But how else do you do it when it's pushing it to get, you know, a book out every 4 weeks?
Yeah.
It's a challenge, but, you know, it's gotten to where, yeah, there are a couple of delays here and there. Sometimes it's, you know, it's 5 weeks between issues, but it's really not that big of a deal if it's coming out on a, you know, same time of the month basis. I just...
Well, and now that you pre-order,
mm-hmm.
and now that the scheduling is so off, you pre-order, so you get the books whenever they show up.
Yes.
I still go into my shop every week, and I keep a list essentially at home of titles I'm getting. It used to be very, and I know you experienced this too. Years ago, it was, okay, it's the first week of the month. Here's the list of 18 books I get this week.
Mm-hmm.
You used to be able to do that. I used to do that. To be fair, I tried to do that. In some ways, I'm still trying to do that.
I did that when I was in high school. That was ages ago.
Okay, well, I've spent most of my life still trying that method. The truth is, I can't do that anymore. Literally, I have to go to Comixology every Tuesday, go to their pull list, see everything that's shipping, go, okay, I read these, you know, and essentially, okay, there's my list, and then print that list. Because, and I can't just, oh, this is week one, and just copy last month's, because it doesn't work that way anymore.
Okay, I got a quick question for our listeners, and I'd really love some feedback from them on this. You mentioned the Comixology pull list system.
Yes.
Now, that's unconnected to their digital stuff. It's something they've had for years.
Yes.
But it's one that sometimes you kind of got to go look for. How many people either use that? Because I've seen pulls on there as high as like 4,000 or 5,000 for hot items.
Yes.
So how many people use that, use something like that, you know, some other, hey, what's come out this week? What do I need to go pick up? How many people are interested in something like that? And if something else were available, would use something like that?
And to be fair, I used Comixology, went away from Comixology when iFanboy had theirs running well,
mm-hmm.
and went back to Comixology when the iFanboy site went away. And to be fair, their pull list thing went away before the site went away, but that's beside the point.
Yeah. Well, maintaining something like that just takes some time and effort.
Absolutely. It takes a ton of effort and a ton of time. But yes, I think it would be very interesting to know how many services there are out there like that and how many people do use them.
It's the sort of thing I've, you know, thought about from time to time, writing something like that, putting something like that out there where you could basically say, here are the titles I'm interested in. I want to pull Batman. Hey, I don't want to pull that issue. I want the title, but not that issue. I want this one with the variant cover instead or something like that. So who uses those kinds of things? What kind of functionality would they want? Is it worth my time to put something like that out there on the internet?
And I've often wondered, I don't feel that being a local, see what came out and buy it customer makes me overly unique.
No, I don't think so at all.
But let me. Okay. There's a big caveat to this. I think the type of people that spends as much time on websites, doing a podcast with you occasionally, I think I am fairly unique in that group of people. Most people tend to pre-order.
I think so, because I think those of us doing the podcasting, the websites, that kind of stuff, hardcore fans.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think there are a lot of people that are fans of comics and at times get really deep into it. And I'm making zero judgment calls on this, but this is something that really kind of hit home to me the other night.
Mm-hmm.
I did dinner with people I used to hang out with back in college. And we used to hang out at the comic book store.
Yep.
And there were 15 or actually not 15. There were probably closer to 30 people there. We took over the party room at the pizza place. They had gluten-free and pizza, hence I was able to go.
Two of them have read a comic book since those days?
I only recall one conversation about comics because I was asking somebody else what they were reading these days.
Yep.
And somebody said, oh, the comic talk started and kind of shut that down pretty quick. Yeah. And through no maliciousness or whatever, but it just, again, these were people that by and large, we hadn't seen each other in 10, 20 years or something. So there was a hell of a lot of other, you know, real things to talk about.
Absolutely.
But for a group that came together centered around a common interest, for that interest of comics to be, and I wasn't in a position where I could hear all the conversations by a long shot, but it seemed to be a negligible point at all. I think people, I know one or two people had both either aged out, been priced out, had lost interest, had kids, had a job, you know, whatever.
Yep.
So I'm almost wondering along those lines if there is, you know how that TV has that, you know, 18 to what, 45 or whatever demographic?
49.
That, 49. That matters. And then after that, who cares?
Yeah. And the 18 to 35 is becoming more important. But yes.
I'm wondering if there's a similar thing happening in comics just out of, there comes a point where the comics are no longer the characters you grew up on or care about, or you can't justify the price, or you're too busy with your job or career, or got to put the kids through college, or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there's an aspect of that which is forcing, or not forcing, but rebounding in the industry or reverberating such that we're getting, let's do a new take on Batgirl or these other characters or what have you. You know, because the people who had been reading, yeah, some of them are still out there, but not enough to matter.
Well, and that becomes the next issue, something we've talked about before and has been talked about overall. To be fair, it's been talked about for 80 years in the industry, is how do you keep replacing? You know, I don't know how old you were when you're talking about the group you're talking about. But in my case, I had a group like that as well. It was somewhere in the 15 to 21 age range.
I was getting into college, so I was 17 or 18, and I was one of, by far, the youngest in the group.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these were, you know, graduate students and the like.
Okay. But again, you're talking teens. Teens to early 20s.
Okay, yeah.
Early to mid-20s,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess the question is, how effective a job have either comics done, or in general society, does it care, to keep that group, you know. I can remember going to a comic shop where it was mostly grade school to junior high kids, and literally watching the average age essentially age with me.
To give this some context, though, with my group,
mm-hmm.
this was just a few years after Crisis on Infinite Earths. DC was still working through the pains of that new continuity.
Yep.
And we're at the point where we're about as far from the launch of the new 52 as, you know, I was
Let's face it, we're as far as we're ever going to get.
Well, I guess my point is, when I was starting to hang out with this group at that comic shop, we were, you know, about 3-4 years after Crisis.
Yep.
We're now about 3-4 years after the New 52 relaunch. So, I mean, there's been an entire continuity bubble over at DC. And while not as clear-cut at Marvel, by and large, a very similar shift.
Oh, absolutely.
The characters that were relevant back then are almost unheard of or unrecognizable now.
Yep.
Or have been replaced multiple times because they've died, or the hammer switched hands, or the shield went to somebody else. You know, whatever.
Yep.
So I think the continuity shuffle pushes people out over time.
Yep. And to be fair, I'm a fairly diehard comic fan and have never gone away. I've had lulls in... You know, I'm at that point where I've got two children that are finally kind of getting out of the toddler stage.
Mm-hmm.
I've seriously considered, okay, do I, you know, A, paper is heavy and takes up a lot of room. Do mm-hmm. I want to go digital?
Yeah.
Going digital, do I want to try to figure out, okay, let's cut half the, you know, a lot of that stuff.
What's worth your time? What's worth your space? What's worth your money?
Yeah, exactly.
Part of why this is really on my mind this month is Star Wars topped the list. I've got 985,976 units for it. I think once you factor in whatever DC or Diamond might have had for reorders, damages, etc., or the UK sales, or things outside of whatever went through Diamond, Marvel's claim of 1 million seems reasonable. Frankly, they're not far off.
I agree.
14,000, it's like drop in the bucket compared to what they got.
Yep.
Obviously, unsustainable sales. We're going to see this thing drop by 80, 90, maybe 90%+ next month.
Yep.
But we only had three other items in the over 100,000 mark.
And they're kind of exactly what we predicted and expected last month.
Batman and Amazing Spider-Man. Yep.
Yep.
We've got the next highest thing is under 75,000.
Yes.
We get below 50,000 when we get to the 17th item on the list.
Well, but let's talk about it, because the over 70,000 are three Marvel number ones.
Yeah.
They're Uncanny Avengers at 74,000, Wolverine number one at 73,000. I got questions about that only because I could have sworn they just killed Wolverine. I could have sworn you said they swore they weren't bringing him back at least for a year.
This is Wolverine's plural.
Okay.
And this is his son, X-23, Mystique, Sabretooth.
So it's not even really a Wolverine book, but they figured they'd put Wolverine on it.
Well, no. Again, it's Wolverine's plural. It's the people related to.
Gotcha. Okay.
Other people out of the Weapon X stuff. And while that first issue did the 73,650, if you go down further, the second issue dropped to, I'm losing sight of
it. The second issue is 43,573, and the third is 42,052.
And the fourth is 39,790 units.
Oh, see, I didn't even make it that far, but okay.
So it drops below the 40,000 mark before the month ends.
So it's essentially a weekly book.
Oh, it's totally a weekly book.
Okay, so it's a weekly book. Okay.
You know, you got nine lead characters or some such, and you can manage to do that. But so out of those three items in the 70 to 100,000 range, which is really the 73 to 75,000 range, Uncanny Avengers number one, we'll see how the second issue does. It'll drop out of this by the second issue, no doubt. Same with Ant-Man. Wolverine's dropped almost by half within this month.
Yeah.
You know, so then
the next regular book is all new X-Men 35 at 51,000.
Yeah. The bottom line is you've only got about 14 titles over 50,000 units. I think it's fair to say Batman and Amazing Spider-Man are strong sellers by whatever metric you may want to choose to judge that term by.
History tells us they're probably going to stay around there. Batman doesn't seem to drop below 100,000. Spider-Man waffles. It can go from 90,000 to 110.
It really comes down to how many more issues are in Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
They've got at least one more, so that one will stay above the 100,000, most likely, but not guaranteed. once Spider-Verse ends, depending what the next arc is, it could definitely drop quite a bit.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to go below 80, but...
Yeah, that's still quite a bit.
No, I agree.
That's like 20,000 units or 25,000, so...
And the next Spider-Man event will push it back over 100,000.
Oh, totally. And I'm not saying these are unrecoverable sales.
Yeah.
But it comes down to what... I mean, should strong seller be used in the context of... in empirical above X, regardless of time, or in relation to what's around it?
No, absolutely.
And I tend to, frankly, use the more in relation to what's around it.
Yeah, okay.
You know, what is a strong seller for today? Because using the term strong seller for anything on this list, if we were to use a benchmark set back in the 80s, this would probably be somewhat laughable.
As we've talked about, going back to the 80s, it's not really that laughable.
Ah, true, true.
Going back to the 90s, it's laughable.
There are certain, yeah, if you were to pick an arbitrary benchmark, which at one point in time seemed reasonable, and shift either forward or backwards a little bit, that benchmark is either going to seem way too high, way too low, depending.
Yeah.
So, we've only got, a handful of titles, and frankly, a lot of these are either still in the honeymoon period or, you know, being leveraged up by some kind of an event or something.
Well, and like we said, Uncanny Avengers, I mean, that's a big book. It could stay in the top 10. It's not likely. Wolverines is a weekly book. We've already seen it drop way out of the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Ant-Man's not going to sell 73,000 again until the next Ant-Man number one, and it's not going to come close.
Yeah.
Thor number four, which is the next item on the list, is...
And again, that's going below the 70,000 mark at this point.
Yeah, and it's going below the 70,000 mark, and it's a title that's gone from 161,000 to 89,000 to 72,000 to 60, you know. Another month or two, it's probably below 65. The next Thor number one, which could easily be this year, might get it back over 100,000, but that's probably the only way.
The next two issues I see selling above the 70,000 mark are selling better than this one. First, when they reveal who Thor is, and whatever the next relaunch is.
Yeah. But then again, you know, like I said, they don't have as many in this group, but that Batman at 110,000, it probably the next one will be there. The Justice League, just under 70,000. If anything's a little low for that title, I don't know if that's consistent, if it's going to stay there. I mean, this is the first one below 70,000.
I thought they had announced essentially a new creative team on the book post-convergence. So that stands a shot at that point of resurging interest in it.
Yeah.
But, you know, Walking Dead's very consistent where it's at.
Harley Quinn at this point is very consistent where it's at.
Yeah. And both of those, I mean, Walking Dead is the end of the top 10 and Harley Quinn is at number 11.
Yep.
So those aren't in any danger of shifting and stuff. But we're getting to where we're in the top 15 and we're closing in on 50,000 units.
Yeah.
Is it strong selling or not at this point? And it really depends on your perspective. You know, when you've got Uncanny X-Men selling below 50,000, Avengers selling below 50,000. Gosh, they're ending Avengers and they're relaunching. I wonder why.
Yeah.
Of course, they're doing it because it's not selling great. It's not selling, oh my God, horrible. But I think part of that is on them. When you have a title like New Avengers and Avengers, where most of the solicits is in 4 months, dot, dot, dot. Come on, tell us something. You know, time runs out. You've been telling us this for literally 5 or 6 months now. You're not promoting the book at all. Of course it's going to go down in sales. It's crazy.
Yeah.
One of the ones I find a little surprising where it's at is the Multiversity Guidebook. And I think, again, this may be how they solicited it, but it's down at rank 36 with 38,672 units.
Mm-hmm.
And this was as much an integral part of the story of Multiversity, more so arguably than any of the other one-shots than Multiversity number one, but also, again, a guidebook of the 52 worlds. But I think people were thinking it was literally just going to be a handbook versus the way they kind of interjected or intertwined, whatever, the handbook into the story, which I thought they did surprisingly well.
Mm-hmm.
But under 39,000 people really seem to care about the whole multiverse side of DC.
I don't know if that's an accurate statement.
Okay. What would you say?
There is the convergence of DC complete diehards and Grant Morrison diehards is at that. Because I would argue I am very interested in the DC multiverse. I'm not a Grant Morrison diehard. I didn't buy this.
Okay, that's a very fair point.
This is some convergence of the absolute diehardest of the diehards at DC and the Grant Morrison uber fans.
Should I point out the irony of using the term convergence in this?
Yeah, no, I know.
And I'm not saying it's a bad use of the term. It's actually ironically apropos.
Yeah.
If we look, though, at the trend of the one-shots for Multiversity, it started over 90,000, got to around 65,000, then 53, 54,000, then about 51 or so thousand, then 78,000-ish, and now again down to where we're at about the 38,000, 39,000. It just shows that this whole concept has been... The execution on this is, whether you think it's great or horrible, is irrelevant. It's taken too long to get out. It's now, wait, does this multiverse match the one in the Infinite Crisis fight for the multiverse? What about the one that was introduced back in 52 that was originally going to kick this off? DC has really confused their multiverse, and Confluence in and of itself is confusing that even further. I mean, I was reading a comic this morning, and I'm blanking on which one it was. It was Earth 2 or Earth 2 World's End.
Okay.
And it referenced a character in there. It was clearly starting to play with the whole multiversal thing going on at DC, and it referenced a character that wasn't mentioned in the Multiversity Guidebook. And if you read...
Without spoiling, can you tell me at least which world it was? Because I'm trying to, because I think I've read all the Earth 2 stuff, so I'm trying to figure out who you're talking about.
It's a character you definitely would have recognized and said, ooh, that's interesting.
Okay.
If you spotted him in the splash.
Got it. Okay. Oh, okay. So it wasn't a character. It was, you had to look in the backs of the splashes to figure out who it was.
We'll talk afterwards. I don't want to spoil it for anyone. It's one that I really would like to see get his own world, not his own, but it was one of the ones, when I read the Multiverse Handbook, Multiversity Guidebook, there were a couple of worlds that stuck out to me as blatantly missing.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that.
And there were a handful, there are 7 mystery worlds, but I could name at least that many off the top of my head worlds that ought to have been included and were not.
Yeah.
You know, the Injustice books... the Batman 66 stuff, the Arrow Flash stuff. You could argue the movie universe has some things there. I mean,
what is the movie universe?
Well, just what they're doing in the cinematic stuff on DC's side. Man of Steel, Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, things of that nature.
So arguably what we've seen is Man of Steel. So you're talking the Man of Steel world at this point.
Fair enough. But I would argue Smallville ought to have its own his own dimension.
Okay.
Because, I mean, that was 10 years worth of stuff they're telling comics right now with that. I mean, when they've got books that they are currently or have just recently published that have a universe of their own that isn't in the Multiversity Guidebook, it makes me stop and wonder what's going on here.
Yeah.
You know, because I went through that list and I've actually had to go do some research. I've pulled up Wikipedia and a few other places to figure out, what is this one?
Yeah.
And again, I want to do, I've talked with Mike Myers over email. He's game for doing an episode on kind of what's what in the multiverse. But
I've seen some of the stuff on the forum you guys have said. No, I think you two would be perfect to do that.
Because I certainly would need some help.
Fascinated.
I consider myself a hardcore DC geek. I think he outdoes me in that respect, which I love. So definitely want to get him on. I just need to figure out when we could record such an episode, and I need to do a little more research myself.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. The Grant Morrison intersection with the multiverse fans, but how does this play in with Convergence? How is DC coming out of Convergence? I was surprised how early they announced some of these new titles. And, I mean, some of the ones they've got sound interesting, but I don't know where their plans are headed. I mean, a Batmite series, a Bizarro series, maybe these
to
will work
fair,
great.
Both of those are listed as minis.
That's true. That's true. As is the Harlequin Power Girl, which would be fun. But We Are Robin versus Robin, Son of Batman. Prez is ongoing. Omega Men is ongoing. Mystic U. Martian Manhunter. I just don't know how well some of these are going to do. And I'm not saying they should be coming out with everything that's a guaranteed heavy hitter, because one, there is no such guarantee. And two, some of these that come out of the blue of, wow, that was a long shot, but it paid off. Those are big wins. But
arguably Harley Quinn, the current Harley Quinn is in that group.
Yes.
That was kind of a long shot.
I would never have pegged it as selling as better than most of the DC stuff.
Yeah, and you chronicled how well it had done previously in miniseries and Sirens and other things. That was, in many ways, a surprise. You know, for DC, a happy surprise.
Yes, and I think it's awesome when they get those. I want to see them have more of those. So when they pull some of these characters out, that it's like, really? That's an odd choice. Put it up to bat, see how it does.
Speaking of that book, and maybe I just don't follow the creators well enough. Obviously, we understand the connection between Jimmy and Amanda and them doing that book, doing the Harley Quinn Power Girl. What happened to Justin? Is he still in comics? Has he moved on to a different career?
I have no idea. I am so bad about tracking creators just on books I read, much less what they do beyond that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I do think that's interesting that he's kind of faded off. I think he might be doing something else that I'm reading, and that's the scary part is I can't.
So he's still in comics, because I yeah. Okay.
I think so, but don't quote me on that. I am the wrong person to ask.
Yeah.
But they are taking Palmiotti and Connor, and isn't that the creative team for Starfire?
Yes.
So, they're trying to replicate a female character, success, you know, kind of a thing. Great character to do that with. Because, I mean, Cyborg has made it to the big leagues, literally, with the Justice League. There's absolutely no reason they couldn't do a similar thing with Starfire. You know, it's a fun character. It's got the same pedigree as Cyborg, literally. And another warrior princess kind of a thing, a la Wonder Woman. It seems like a character that could really do well.
Quickly went to Comic Book DB.
You know, they're retooling a number of titles at DC. They need to. They're, again, when we get below 30, rank 30, we're below 40,000 units.
Yeah.
What's happening, by and large, isn't working great.
It looks like Justin Gray did a few of the Future's End books.
That sounds right.
And not in some of the Lone Ranger stuff, but he doesn't. He did the end of Batwing. But yeah, that partnership, which had its niche fan base, to be fair, it was a small niche fan base, seems to have dissipated.
That's too bad. They did some good stuff together.
And it looks like he's doing the end of Star Spangled War Stories as well.
Likewise, Abnett and Lanning seem to, you know, be doing different things these days.
Yeah.
We've even seen that with the Luna brothers.
Yes.
And, you know, you get to a point where you've got a creative team that's working great together, and they're sinking a lot of time into these projects. They've got to pick and choose how they spend their time, and hey, if they've got different goals, different desires, if they can split off and both be successful from any creative team like that, by all means do so. Double your output, essentially.
And to be fair, we're having this conversation now. You go back 10 years ago, you get that. You get Palmiotti's previous partnership. And, I mean, you know, one's now the IOC of Marvel, and Jimmy's over at DC doing his thing. And
so it doesn't always work out, is what you're saying? No, I'm kidding. Yeah. No, Quesada he's, you know, his tenure over at Marvel is easy to deride certain parts of it, but I cannot deny the success they're having.
No, absolutely you can't.
They are, I mean, I consider myself, deep in my heart, I grew up on DC, I am a DC fanboy, but, man, I'm loving what's going on at Marvel these days. They've got a lot of books that are just a lot of fun, that are really well done. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm loving Superior Iron Man. I think it's one of the best Daredevil books I'm reading these days, which is an odd thing to say about Iron Man book. And one I've said often, and I'm going to repeat often just to hammer home the point, but Marvel tells good stories. And I think a lot of that comes from having a strong person at the top of the company that's a creative influence. There's a trickle down there. Yep. I've got to think that some of what's going on at DC that's not working out as well is, you know, as much as I love Geoff Johns as a creator, Jim Lee as an artist, Dan Didio, I've read a lot of his comic work, and his writing is sometimes okay, sometimes great, but usually just okay. I don't think those three guys up at the top have created the creative spark that's really needed to permeate down through editorial, through the entire lineup, to really get the DC universe or multiverse, take your pick, I don't care, to really get that firing on all cylinders.
Do you think now that they're together, it'll help?
I don't know if the Burbank versus New York aspect played into that or not, but it is entirely possible once everything gets really settled in Burbank. I'm hoping they use that as an opportunity to kind of change up how they're doing things, mm-hmm. how they're looking at stories, how they're producing comics, how they're managing their content, their line, their production. But I don't expect an overnight change either.
Yeah, and for all the talk of that being kind of that triumvirate of those three guys, two of them were here on the West Coast, and every other editor in the comic world was not. So, I mean, at some point you got to go, how, you know, you can say it's those three guys. How much was Dan being the guy in the office in New York with all the comic editors kind of the only guy?
Oh, and that may be a lot of it, because I have a lot of respect for him on the more the business side, on the creative side. I don't think he's the big asset of the three there. I would say Geoff Johns is, clearly. Not that Jim Lee is anything to dismiss there, given all the Wildstorm work, etc. A lot of brilliant things came out of Wildstorm. But if that is the case, then as a company, they failed to take advantage of technology that has been around for over a decade. Skype, for instance.
Well, and who knows? Maybe they did. But
we didn't see it panning out.
We didn't see it panning out. That's a different issue. But, I mean, you know, let's face it. Two of those three guys were here on the West Coast, and arguably the office that produced all the comics was not.
True. Even with the time difference and stuff like that, you could do conference calls. You could give them, I don't know. There's something with the editorial makeup of I say at DC that I think has some weaknesses.
And did they lost Axel Alonso somewhere in there, right?
Quite possibly.
I'm not the best.
I'm reading too many comics. I'm doing too many podcasts. I do not keep up on where people are at.
Yeah, no.
If somebody can find a way to help me with that, I would greatly appreciate it. Because, you know, just who has what, you know, exclusive contracts and stuff, I think is relevant. Because if you've locked up, you know, Bendis over at Marvel for the next couple of years, well, I mean, that's one less player potential over at DC.
Yeah.
Not that I want him over at DC. He's doing great at Marvel. But you know what I mean? I think Marvel has a stronger editorial bench than DC, and that's who picks creative teams, that's who greenlights projects, that's who determines what's going to happen. And I really think, looking at Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, looking at the lineup of new DC titles, both companies are looking to really branch out and get a different, broader diversity and group of readers out there than they've currently got. If they can pull that off, I think that could be great for the industry. For me personally, I'm looking at a couple of these titles and seeing a number that, you know, I may, you know, 6 months from now, a year from now, not be all in at Marvel and DC.
Yeah.
And I see pros and cons to that. On the one hand, it saves me money. On the other hand, I really like being able to do these episodes, these articles, and the stuff on the sales with a rich background about the material, which I don't think is something the other people doing the sales analysis have. I think some of them are looking at it more from strictly a business point of view, an aggregate point of view,
mm-hmm.
than how do these sales reflect the content of these books. I mean, I'm reading, I think you've got to go, geez, most of the way into the top 100 before you hit a book I'm not getting. I think there are three comics in the top 100 that I didn't get. You know, obviously, the further down you go, the percentage shifts radically. A lot of ones near the bottom I'm not getting.
Yeah.
But it gives me the ability to judge, you know, how do I think the quality of this book is versus what happened with the sales. I mean, a good example of that is at rank 65. Fantastic Four went from issue 14 to 642 and jumped up 21.86% in sales.
Yep.
That's only about 5,400 units. Still, it's percentage-wise huge.
Percentage-wise, it's huge, but it's still only 54 on, you know, as you said.
It's still squeaking just barely above the 30,000 mark.
Yeah. I did want to ask you about rank 46.
Sure.
Because this is a book you guys reviewed.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
What happened here? Is this bad timing on when this came out? How does it do most of its sales in reorder?
I'm really...
This is 35... let's clue. I realize people aren't looking at this list. We're talking about Star Trek Planet of the Apes number 1.
Mm-hmm.
It showed up at, as I said, showed up at rank 46 with 35,733 issues of reorder activity on number one. Issue number two is also on this list, way down, 13,000 units for issue number two. And again, you're talking a book that had less than 20,000 on this list for the same issue number one last month. Does this have to do with New Year's and that shipping week? And because nothing in this makes sense to me.
It came out on the last day of the year.
Yes.
So this is a reflection of what was invoiced to retailers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest, I don't know if technically that means when the invoice was sent out, when the invoice was paid, or because this is something where literally that difference could matter. Could it be they don't get all the invoices out on the same day? Most go out on the final day of the year. Some, though, spilled into the first day of the new year. I don't know. This is one of those things where we have often, at particularly year-end break, seen some funniness where you have items shipped in December in the January numbers or items that shipped in January on the December numbers. It really comes down to when did some of the bookkeeping happen. And in this case, I think it was a matter of stuff just split across. In either case, this title dropped 74.62% from those total known sales of 53,000 for first issue of Star Trek Planet of the Apes down to 13,460 units for the second issue.
Again, that's total known, but if you compare what was on last month's to what's on this month's for one and two, that's why is there any way we see another 30,000 of number two next month and we get 10,000 of number? I have no idea.
Almost certainly not. And the reason I say that is this came out on the 21st versus the 31st. Yes, it could happen, but it may just be when did a certain Diamond distribution center get their copies to send out, or when did one distribution center do their bookkeeping versus another? I don't know.
What's really interesting is if it was something like that systemic at Diamond, you think it's one of only two reorder books on here, and the other one's even more confusing. So there's only two reorder books on this entire top 300. The other one, I just had it, Zombies and Robots, number one from IDW, at rank 192.
Mm-hmm.
It shows 8,000 issues of reorder. However, it shows its original release date being in January.
This one?
For six.
This is a different case.
Okay.
This is not the first Zombies versus Robots series.
Okay.
It's marked as reorder, and it's for, because I think there was a previous volume in 2006.
Yes.
So I just didn't catch that.
Okay.
When I first wrote this number crunching system, geez, closing in on 15 years ago now.
You didn't have to worry about everything having 10, 20 volumes?
Exactly. And it's one of those things, particularly if you don't see a parenthetical year in there. Mm-hmm. If you see the parenthetical year, that means I've actually acknowledged this is a run of a series from here to whenever.
Gotcha.
In this case, I've never put Zombies versus Robots down as a known title.
Gotcha.
Not that that really means a whole lot, even in my number crunching system. It means nothing outside of it, of course. But that's why that one is a reorder. And normally I go through and I did this time.
My point being, if something systemic like that was happening with books that shipped on 12/31, you think there'd be other ones that would show up as reorder from that same date?
Given there were only 8 books that showed up.
Okay.
And this is one of the few that were not Marvel and DC.
Yeah, okay.
It seemed to have happened to a high percentage of them, actually.
Okay.
Just with the one.
Fair enough.
Normally, though, what I do is I go through the reorders and say, hey, is this reasonable? And I just didn't catch the Zombies versus Robots one as a previous volume.
Yeah, because I was looking at that. I'm going, what? Something weird's going on with that book, that Planet of the Apes. And then, like you said, so then I looked for other reorders. I'm like, there's none of those. And okay.
Well, I mean, to me, the weird thing is dropping 75% in sales between the first and second issue, regardless of when the first one was invoiced.
Which is why I'll be interested to see what we see next month.
I'm hoping we see more reorder on number two, but is
any chance number one was some kind of weird special deal where it ended up in one of those boxes or something where a large number of people got it, and maybe those didn't go out till after the first of the year, and that's why all these invoices, these reorders, most of them aren't really reorders. They're that initial order for whatever special gimmick was done with those.
That's certainly possible. I don't really have any way
of knowing that, yeah.
Of knowing what's happening. I need to contact all these different box companies and just say, hey, I do the sales. I'd like to be able to mention you on a regular basis. Whenever you've got a comic coming out, let me know if you think it'll be in the Diamond Numbers or not, you know.
Yeah.
Just because, hey, some people may read the article and then go buy your stuff.
Well.
As to, you know, currently I've got no way of knowing. I need to work on a way of knowing. In this particular case, Planet of the Apes had a couple of different covers. Most of them were, almost all of them you could order however many you wanted, unless you went for a black and white incentive, I think it was. They had a George Perez cover, a blank cover, a couple of sub covers that were 1 in 20, or 1 in 10, 1 in 25. And they did two covers with a 1-to-1 ratio.
So 50-50s.
Yeah. Nothing, though, that would account for, oh my god, the first issue is doing just gargantuan numbers.
Yeah.
But I'm only looking at what was in the initial retailer order form. There are a lot of cases where these things come out in the previews plus between previews, yep. And I don't really have visibility into that either yet.
Yeah. No, fair enough. That was one of the ones that struck me as odd.
Well, going towards second issue drops, though, if you go a few ranks down to rank 50, Shield number 2, it dropped over 64% down from 94,503 last time around to 33,965.
So, yeah, no, Shield's crazy. There's a bunch of these that are crazy. I have no idea how to pronounce it, so I'm not going to try. Rank 102, if you want to give it a shot, go for it. Image number 2, ODYC.
Odyssey,
okay. Down 55%. Again, that Planet of the Apes is down 74, but most of the sales are compared to this, which is weird. Valiant number 2, down 45% at rank 167. There's some crazy. Shaft number 2 from Dynamite, down 53%. Graveyard Shift from Image Comics down 44%. You filter this list just to number twos. There are some Army of Darkness from Dynamite down 53% on issue two.
Issue twos, people sample number ones. They tend not to sample number twos.
Yeah.
Even on, you know, things you would think going in, like Smallville Season 11 Continuity number 2 at rank 196.
Yep.
I imagine most people getting this have been following the Smallville Season 11 stuff.
So, yeah, it's still down 6%.
Yeah. And this is also unusual because it's a digital first title.
Yeah. DC, I've never heard of this. Wolf Moon number 2 down 44% from DC Comics?
I believe that's a Vertigo title.
I was going to say that's got to be some other imprint. Okay.
It's not New 52, I'm certain of that.
Yeah.
The one that really got me this time around in terms of how it moved in terms of sales was that Fantastic Four 642.
Yeah.
The story literally follows right on the heels of number 14. It's not like a creative team shift or change in direction or anything. It's just another issue. But because they shifted the numbering and started to promote this is, you know, the beginning of the end kind of a deal. You know, Marvel gets a lot of bang for the buck out of ticking clocks on their covers. The countdown begins. It's like, really?
Well, and the other one that's interesting, because I don't think it's a steady either. Because we don't have it. Vampirella, number 100 from Dynamite for $7.99. Up, 3,000 units, 70%. But the last one before that's 38.
Yeah.
Where did they make up the 100? I mean,
that's the last issue I have sales for.
But they've rebooted. Literally, this 100 had to have been made. The old magazines, there was more than 100. I have no idea where they decided to get 100 from.
Because 38 shipped in February 2014. I don't know.
Yeah, they haven't put out 60 issues since then.
No, but they may have reverted to, here's what the overall, this is the 100th issue of Vampirella that they have done overall.
Maybe they, yeah. Because again, you go back to the originals and the magazines, there's more than 100 of those alone.
Oh, yeah.
So,
But it's literally a numbers game, and not in terms of numbers of sales, but issue numbers.
Yeah.
You know, let's flip again Marvel reverting Fantastic Four back to the original numbering for like the third time or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you've got something where you could say, you know, all said and done, we've done 100 issues of, you know, Captain Marvel or Vampirella or whatever, slap that number on it.
Yeah.
I don't say it's gaming the system, it's gaming the readers.
It's doing something screwy.
And every time they do that, the readers, we're not stupid. Oh, you haven't thought, you just wanted me to you suckered me into buying this.
An $8 issue, mind you.
Yeah.
So.
But those are the kinds of things that if you're making a jumping on point, great. If you're making a jumping in point, awesome. If you can get somebody to go pick up your book, make it something that they've sampled that one, they're going to stick with it. That just normally doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Again, look at the fact that most of the things we have in the columns that compare sales to the previous sales, almost all of those are red, indicating a negative number.
Yeah.
So few of those are in black, indicating positive sales. I mean, really, it's that way every month, though. You know, we've got, I think, 23, which is actually kind of low, 23 items that sold better than the previous issue. And some of those by, you know, 4 units or a dozen or 2 units. It's better than nothing, but few things are steadily increasing in sales. And a lot of these ones that are going up again, we could look at and say, well, you know, there's an obvious reason as to why this did and the next probably won't.
And there's the price differences, because there's some weird things. Because I always like to try to compare the retail rank to the quantity rank to see where there's some really, really weird gaps.
Mm-hmm.
DC's pretty much are after Batman, which has sold so many and is a three, all the $2.99 books have skewed retail ranks because they're simply cheaper than everything else. Multiversity, on the other hand, being that expensive book, is actually retail rank number 6. We talked about that guidebook earlier.
Right. Really, the way I would go through this, and what I need to do is I need to do a monthly chart that's got the price, the extended price compared to the quantity rank,
yeah,
or the retail rank, I mean, to see where things are out of alignment.
And there's nothing that's way out of alignment this time other than, you know, like a few of those that I've mentioned. Some of these, that $1.99 issue of Avengers is a little out of whack at rank 80, that bullying issue.
Mm-hmm. But again, you know, you expect it to be that way given the price point. It's not going to pull in as many dollars.
Yeah. And again, like I said, DC's in general, their retail ranks 25 to 30 behind their quantity rank simply because they have all those $2.99 books and nobody else does.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of that, I mean, the $3.99 price point, that's about 2/3 of the list. Certainly it is 2/3 if you look at the 29 items we've got below the top 300. It's about 58% if you don't, but it's just outpacing the $2.99 price point by, you know, a 2-to-1 margin. So I do think a lot of people are starting to get priced out of the market. No, they are priced out of the market. It's hard to justify the cost of these comics.
Well, and here's the thing. $2.99 is DC books and Bongo books. And then a few Image books. Image books are all over the place. There's 299s, there's 350s, there's 399s. They're kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
But other than that, let's face it. It's DC and Bongo. And everybody else, 399 is their default. Marvel still has a few bizarre books at 299, but they're nothing. They're not mainstream Marvel, that's for sure. The 299 Marvel books that made this list, again, I have no idea what these think. Marvel's Avengers number 2, is that a kiddie book?
That is, which rank is that? That's,
189.
That's an adaptation of the movie.
Okay. And then you've got 2 Marvel Universe, which are the kids line.
Those are the kids line.
And those are the only Marvel books that are $2.99.
And they are 3 of the 4 worst selling books of the month for Marvel.
Exactly.
mainly because we run out of space down at the bottom of the list at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, Image.
Damn,
randomly.
I don't think I'd realized that Marvel had basically gone $3.99 across the board.
And every other publisher has too. It's a few creators in Image and DC.
Yeah.
And that's it. The other interesting thing that we talked about a month ago, I believe,
mm-hmm,
is Dark Horse. Dark Horse seemingly has reverted.
They're close to 350, almost across the line. Just
across
except
the board. Yeah, Dark Horse, everything's gone to 3. As a matter of fact, yeah, everything at Dark Horse is 350, with the exception of a couple.
Conan Red Sonja, Gru, Friends and Foe.
Usagi Yojimbo.
Senso. So when that goes back to the ongoing, who knows? Strain, Knight Eternal, and Halo Escalation.
Yeah, but you know the core of kind of the Dark Horse books are all 350 now.
What's interesting is it's not a clear division between licensed and non-licensed.
No, because all your Alien, Predator, Buffy, Angel, those are all 350. It's not even all the Conans. Conan the Avenger, Tomb Raider, all the BPRD books, Hellboy, BPRD, Hell on Earth, Ape Sapien,
but
those are all 350.
Conan Red Sonja is a joint production with Dynamite.
That, yeah, yes.
So that could be part of that.
Yeah, it's weird, and you know, we've talked about this, and I've made this point ad nauseum, and no one seems to listen. Readers don't care, and when I say don't care, I don't mean don't care. I mean,
well, that's what it sounds like.
Okay, they may care. They do not make buying decisions based on it.
Yeah.
Marvel and DC, as far as percentages, we've talked about, DC's actually down. Keeping books at $2.99 doesn't help. The $2.99 books aren't the books necessarily at the top of the list. As we pointed out, Batman's not one of the $2.99 books. It's still where it is.
Mm-hmm.
Readers have very clearly stated they will not punish publishers for raising the prices, and they will not reward publishers for keeping the prices low.
Certainly lowering the price never helps sales.
No.
But raising the price also, while it can hurt, usually doesn't hurt more than the increase would make up for. I think where it comes into play, and there's zero way to really measure the impact of this, is when a title is launched, I think there is a contingent of readers that would say, you know, at $3.99 I'm not going to try it, but at $2.99 I might have.
Yeah.
Now, as to whether they actually would have at $2.99 or, you know, how much that impacts, yeah, there's no way to know.
That's the old, I read the first one, oh, I'll get the trade. And as you've talked about many times on the trade, most of those people never get the trade.
A lot of these things, I mean, for some of these things, they are training us not to buy the book.
Yeah.
I'm not going to buy the digital, so by the time it comes out in print, I've already had one chance to buy it in one shot, and they've missed it.
Yep.
I'm going to buy it in print. But if I didn't buy it in print and I was going to wait for the trade, now I've got two times I haven't done it. Now it's a trend.
Yeah.
It's going through these Dark Horse ones. All of these titles have been at these prices throughout, so it's not like they've rolled down the prices on any of these.
Wait a minute.
They've made the point of staying, of launching titles at 350 in a lot of these cases.
Wait a minute. Let me go back and take a look, because I didn't think that was true.
I mean, BPRD, it's been 350 since issue 100. Prior to that, okay, it was a bunch of miniseries.
Fair enough.
Most of these, I didn't see any where they'd gone from $3.99 down to $3.50.
Okay, fair enough.
But they seem to be holding the price there, and I think that's a smart move. I mean, Dark Horse is not a publisher known for making, at least in my opinion, bold, drastic, and radical moves.
Mm-hmm.
They're known for being pretty much rock solid and producing good comics over the course of time.
Yep.
You know, they're not trying to rewrite the rules of the industry. They seem to have a good grasp on what they are and work with them.
Yep.
And they've done unbelievably well with some licensed properties. Again, Star Wars for 20, 25 years, or whatever that ran. What they're doing with the Wheaton properties, with Buffy and so forth. They also seem to be well-respected by a lot of creator-owned properties. So what they're doing is working for them.
Yep. It'll be interesting to see if we started to get a bunch of Terminator books from them with the movie approaching.
You know, they did the two miniseries. Those have ended, and I haven't seen anything on the heels of that.
Yeah.
If I were planning on doing more Terminator stuff, I would have done something to bridge the gap. Maybe a, you know, season 3 of the Sarah Connor Chronicles. Wrap that up or something.
And to be fair, we've only seen the trailer for the new movie, but it...
I think it looks cool.
I tend to agree, but I seem to think they've decided to go a different direction again.
Yeah, cool.
We got Salvation, and this movie seems to be, we're going to completely rewrite that, because without Arnold, this didn't work, so we're going back to putting him in it somehow, even if he's an old man now.
Yeah, yeah. the bottom line is there's an opportunity for Dark Horse, if they still have the license, to do some more with it. And yep. if they hold off a couple of months and then come back with the time for the movie, that could work great. But, you know, I was in the habit of getting Terminator comics for a little bit. Now I am not, because there's not any to get.
Yeah.
They need to sell me back on the property. Not that it's a hard sell with me. I admit that.
Yeah.
But.
I'm trying to, you know, I mean, we could talk about a bunch of these books. There's nothing particularly unique on this list.
One thing I do want to talk about real quick.
Sure.
Ranks 236 and 7, Dynamite Entertainment. We've got King, Flash Gordon, and King the Phantom. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure elsewhere in here is the other King stuff. This is a case where Dynamite basically shifted around how they were doing some of these properties. And I went from being on board with Flash Gordon to not. You know, they did, in my opinion, a really not so great job promoting these books.
Did other ones come out, or are they coming out next month? Because those are the only two on this list, which means the other ones are either below the radar, which is possible, or they haven't come out yet.
I'm hoping they haven't come out. These both shipped the last day of the month, so they probably haven't.
Yeah, okay. So
they were supposed to come out earlier in the month. They both shipped on the 28th versus the 7th and the 7th 21st. And
okay.
But the promotional stuff had no indication of if this was continuing on from what they'd been doing with Flash Gordon, the 8-issue miniseries, if they were tying together, if they were not, and the solicit had lots of words but little information.
Yeah.
So it's like, you gave me a jumping off point, I took it. You know, if you want to get me back onto Flash Gordon, you got to resell me. And the fact that the Flash Gordon miniseries ended the same day this one started implied to me, yeah, they're not connected. Maybe they are. If somebody read the King Flash Gordon, let me know. But I think they dropped the ball on the marketing on this one. So I was disappointed with that.
Yeah. I will say this. On the bright side, they seemingly have cut back on the multiple titles. I don't know if it's helped them. No, they haven't. Because there's... Oh, you said that's the last... So Flash Gordon 8 was the last one.
Yes.
And then King is the new one.
Yes. Okay. But they also have a Twilight Zone. I think it's Style and Substance or some such.
The new one, yeah.
And the ongoing hasn't wrapped up yet, I think.
That is true. No, it has not.
But we don't have any more Bionic Man stuff. There are a couple other properties that have just kind of played through.
But to be fair, when Twilight Zone, the ongoing, wasn't that originally announced as a 12-issue mini? So it's only got one left. So the Style and Substance is kind of its replacement.
Kind of, but it's overlapping.
It is overlapping, barely.
Well, I mean, if it's...
For a month or two. 11 and 1 came out this month, so next month, presumably, we'll get 2 and 12.
Yes, but to me, there's a difference between concurrent and overlapping.
Okay. Yeah, overlapping, yeah. It's, at least it's not, you know, we've talked about this. I was really into the Green Hornet stuff until there was 20 books.
Well, I was into it until Kato was both Chinese and Japanese, and they were in the 40s and the present day, and he had a daughter and he didn't, and, you know...
And he was male, and he was female.
I couldn't keep track of what was going on between all the different continuities of one character.
Yeah.
Drew was asking me that in the latest Weekly Comics Spotlight. You know, am I having problems keeping track of what's going on with the Injustice version of these characters versus the Earth 1, the Prime Earth, the Earth 2, or any of the other versions of some of these characters? And the bottom line is, yeah, it does get confusing. You know, it's... And I love parallel worlds. I love the multiverse. Don't get me wrong. But it all does sort of blur together at times.
See, I actually think, to begin with, DC did a pretty good job in the New 52 with the multiverse. In the fact that you had one Earth, and then very quickly you had a second, and then nothing happened. Now, arguably, you got a third with the Forever Evil stuff.
Oh, totally.
Okay. And...
But the thing with that
is... And then Multiversity came out, and it went from you have one to we've got 25, and Grant Morrison's in charge of all the rest of them.
I would disagree a little with a couple of those. First off, they set up the new Earth Zero, whatever, and get it going. It takes a little while to adjust to that.
Yep.
Then we get Earth 2 introduced with Mr. Terrific, World's Finest, and Earth 2 itself. And those are different enough
characters. And the Huntress miniseries.
And the Huntress miniseries, you are correct.
Yeah.
But they're with characters that aren't really overlapping.
Yep.
So it's not like I've got competing versions of Dick Grayson or something floating about.
Yep.
You know, whereas now I'm reading him in Grayson, I'm reading him in Earth 2 World's End, I'm reading him over in Injustice. And Injustice kind of sort of introduced another world, but not really his official part of the multiverse. It's just another continuity.
Yeah, that's a video. I still give leeway. That's a video game. That's its own thing.
It's tying in Convergence.
It is?
Yes.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
Hence my confusion as to what's in the multiverse, what's not. If they had just said, hey, this is one of the worlds in the multiverse. Cool. Got it. Done.
Yeah.
But we're picking up different timelines and different things like that in Convergence with the pre-Flashpoint stuff, the Flashpoint stuff, the Zero Hour, the Old Earth 2, the, you know, the Injustice characters. Which of these are pillow worlds, which are not? I would have hoped the guidebook would have told me it kind of did and kind of didn't.
Yeah. Well, and then arguably you also had the Earth 10 or Earth X, depending on how you look at it, characters that got miniseries at the beginning of the New 52. You've argued they were clearly on Earth 0. I've argued I have no clue which Earth they were on.
I don't think the
4,000 people read those, so who cares?
Well, I don't think the versions we're going to see of the Freedom Fighters on Earth 10, Earth X are going to be the same ones we'd seen
in those miniseries.
I think we'll get a different. I think. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've gotten one image of them in the guidebook to go on.
Yeah.
But, I mean, obviously, the Red Circle characters have kind of evaporated. As far as I know, the Milestone characters have pretty much evaporated. I mean, there's a Milestone 2.0 initiative going on. I don't know if we're ever going to see Static or Hardware or Icon or Rocket in the DC stuff again, which is a shame. If we don't see them there, I want to see them somewhere. They're great characters.
Was Static a licensed character for DC?
I had thought that they had essentially bought out the Milestone stuff.
Yeah.
But based on this new Milestone 2.0, that doesn't seem to be the case, or maybe the rights reverted. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Static was clearly part and parcel of the new 52 universe early on.
Yep.
Was a member of the Teen Titans before and during the new 52, and just nowhere to be seen since. They started losing
body parts quickly, so.
Well, they need to figure out what characters they want to keep in play, which ones they don't, and do something better about that.
Yep.
And if they've lost interest in their toys, why should we care? And if they've lost interest in toys that they've had around and said, you know, suddenly the Omega Men that they haven't really done squat with for decades, that's worth a title. How come? I'm not saying you're wrong, but explain. How come? You know, more than just they're there. So, well, I look at these sales. I see a lot of things in lackluster shape. I see a lot of major shakeup happening, looking to happen in 2015. I see the need for that shakeup. I see the justification for that shakeup. I don't know where things are going to be 6 months, a year from now. Which on the one hand is great. It gives me, you know, new and fun things to look at every month in the numbers and in the comics. But it also makes me wonder, you know, am I getting to that point where maybe I'm starting to age out of some of this stuff or just drift away from it? I don't know.
Yeah, well, and it's going to be interesting to see what Marvel does too.
Yes.
Because for as much success as they've had, and we talked about this a little bit, other than number ones and Spider-Man, I don't have anything exactly blowing the doors off this sales chart either.
No, not at all.
And Star Wars, they own it, but essentially it's a licensed property. Spider-Man's fine. But the rest of the Avengers, they got to keep doing number ones or nobody really cares about them.
Yeah.
The X-Men have been mixed in. I'm assuming you saw the big news that they got Spider-Man's film rights back, sort of.
Not that they got the film rights back, but they've got an agreement to integrate him into the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yep. So that'll be interesting to see what happens there. I think that also means the talked about and potentially pre-production Sinister Six movies probably going away.
I was unclear what was happening with the Sinister Six, any kind of spinoffs from the Amazing Spider-Man 2, which I still actually have not seen. I've got the DVD sitting downstairs. Just haven't watched that yet. I need to. Yeah. Or Venom, or any of the other spinoff books, movies. I don't know what's going on with those.
Was there a Venom movie?
I thought there was a plan to do
that. Plan? One. Okay. Yeah, I thought Sinister Six was the next one, but okay.
It could be. I thought they had announced three or four, but I didn't really pay that close attention.
Now, to be fair, Sony was losing money on the last few Spider-Man movies. It's going to be very interesting to see if they can pull off a similar deal with the X-Men.
I would like to see them do that, if for no other reason than to see, you know, Nick Fury in a Wolverine film or something.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Fox and how they're doing with the X films is very different than Sony and how they were doing with the Spider-Man films. So, Fox has less much of a reason to sign a deal like Sony did.
Yeah.
At this point.
Well, and they've already, I think, said that the Fantastic Four movie is taking place in a different reality than the X-Men movies, because otherwise it's, oh, you're just mutants. What's the big deal?
Yep.
So it's like, and narratively from the movie standpoint, I get it, but I look at how fun the Marvel films are and would like to see the playing field opened up a bit.
Yeah. Anything else really interesting on this list? Because this is in many ways a very average list, and in many ways kind of down month list.
I've got the thing filtered to Marvel, so I want to mention a couple of titles real quick. Elektra number 10, 12,121. Don't expect to see that around much longer. All New Ultimates already ended with number 12 there. All New Ghost Rider number 10, 13,866. Don't know if that's marked as ending or not. Probably will be soon. All New Invaders, just under 14,000. Don't expect to see it around much longer. Deathlock number 4 is below 15,000. So they'll finish out the arc. Who knows after that? Storm, 15,784. Don't expect that to hit past 12. Likewise, Cyclops number 9, 16,287. So we're seeing a lot more titles than I would have expected from Marvel under the 20,000 mark. All of those, and Secret Avengers, X-Force, and Iron Fist Living Weapon are all below Nightcrawler, which is at 18,832 with issue 10. That ends at issue 12. X-Factor is number 19 here, 19,104, also marked as ending. So I think all those titles below that are on life support at best.
Yep. Yeah.
So we've got a number of slots for new number ones over at Marvel. And I would expect the Cyclops and Storm slots, and probably X-Force, to all go to other mutant characters or teams of some sort, assuming those are just free slots from an editorial position in that office. Mm-hmm. Someday I'll get energetic and kind of track through what titles are from what office, and therefore kind of limit the field for how they'd get replaced.
And you want to talk about the Icon book that's in the middle there that you guys did review?
Powers number 1?
Yep.
16,467 units.
Yeah. I don't know how that's done compared to previous versions of Powers.
Give me just a sec. I will find out.
Okay.
I've got my other spreadsheet open where I can basically say, go give me a chart of everything that's Powers, and let me filter out the Project Superpowers titles, of which there are a bunch.
Yes.
And, oh, this one actually I talked about a little when we reviewed it. You get a little bit of a bump with each new volume.
Yes.
But within, after the first issue, the 2009 volume, and three issues in on the Bureau volume, it's right back where it was.
Okay.
So you get a little bit of a surge at the beginning of a theoretical jumping on point, but it's steadily flowed down from the 40,000 that the 2004 volume launched at. Which was well up from the 2001, but it was also a...
That was the move from Image to Icon, right?
Yeah, I believe so. So it's one of those things, the new volume, it looks like it increases sales, but it doesn't last.
And that TV show's coming, supposedly, right?
Yes.
Okay. On a weird format that...
It's on the PlayStation Network, so I don't know how I'll be able to watch it.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat.
Just one point of clarification. Powers Bureau ended at 8,379 units. So this one started about twice. Where that did. The question is, how long will that last?
Yeah.
That's a much bigger jump. That did better than the entire Powers Bureau series, than any issue of that.
Well, it'll also be interesting to see how many, when the next one comes out.
It's, that's really the best that title has done since April 2010.
Okay.
So I don't know if it'll stay that way or not, really. Depends, like you said, what happens with the series, both TV series and comic series.
Yeah.
So, We already talked a little about the price points again, how $299 just not that popular these days, which sucks because I like the price point. The total losses over total gains, comparing previous issues and stuff, just as always, so lopsided in favor of the losses over the gains.
Right. It's over half a million and compared to 18,000. I mean, it's not lopsided. That's ridiculous.
Yes. But kind of par for the course.
Yeah.
But it's also a biased metric in so much as a lot of the gains on the list are from new titles, not increases in sales.
Yeah, man.
This goes towards that cyclical nature and transitory nature of comic book sales. Titles just don't stick around. They get replaced by better-selling ones. So it's hard to devise a metric that really accounts for that easily, given that it's hard to keep track of when titles are coming and going. So it's going to be fun to look at next month's. I'm particularly curious again as to the staggeringly huge perception of a drop on Star Wars. Not a perception of a drop. It will be an actual drop.
I think there is a high likelihood Star Wars is still number one and two on the list, and in three, and then the month after, Star Wars will be one, two, and three on the list.
Between Star Wars, Darth Vader, and Princess Leia, I think that's a definite probability. But even if it stays top on the list, it's still going to have gone down, you know, nearly 750,000 units.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. But I don't think 250,000 is unreasonable for the launches of the other two series.
I agree. And I think Darth Vader will outsell Star Wars next month, quite possibly.
Yep.
Princess Leia, I'm not so sure on, but it'll. Star Wars is gonna own the list for a bit.
Yep.
It's just a question of how long, and does it displace other things, and do we see... I'm less, frankly, interested in how those first issues and first couple issues do than how many titles we get over the 50,000 mark. Because I do think there's a point, and I'm not sure where it is. I mean, certainly under 20,000 for a Marvel DC book is in the danger zone. Under 10,000 is gone. If most books are in the 20 to 40,000, 20 to 50,000 range, is that really survivable for those companies or not?
Yeah.
I think they need some other books to kind of, you know, help pay the overhead. So, anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think I'm good.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify that you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the monthly question. The Diamond Order Index only goes two decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or a few scanned items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Athlogic and English language itself seem to work very differently there.